Back when we first started preparing for this service, I was offered the opportunity to share my sermon that won the 2023 Skinner Award from the Unitarian Universalist Association. I very much appreciated that offer, as it would certainly save me the trouble of crafting an entirely new sermon. But something to know about me is that before I was a professional minister, I was a professional editor. And so, of course, I was compelled to make a few adjustments, including some with a pencil just now, to this sermon, which I first delivered almost exactly a year ago. So if you have read or heard the original, some of this will seem familiar, and a few parts will seem new. For most of you who are probably normal people who do not surf the internet to read sermons, it will all be fresh. And I'm hopeful there will be moments of resonance for all of us. Whenever I give a sermon about something like death or grief or authoritarianism, I feel deeply grateful toward anyone who knew the title in advance and came to church anyway. Maybe this morning you figured it's already cold and frosty, bring on the tyranny. But truly, I do thank you for being here. I've been giving presentations and sermons about rising authoritarianism since the summer of 2016. It felt a little lonely in those first few years. The idea of America becoming a dictatorship was not part of mainstream conversations the way it is today. And I was often surprised by how thankful people were to me for bringing the topic up, for naming what was and still is going on, for affirming their sense that democracy and our civic institutions are at risk. 8 years on, things are still not well, but awareness of what's happening is much broader, and continuing to talk about it has so much value. Talking about it can help us figure out together what we can do. And a congregation is a good place to have this conversation. A good congregation, an honest congregation, is a place to talk about the hard stuff, the real stuff of this world. To look at big questions about life and power and oppression. To examine questions through the lens of our most deeply held values. And to seek and hold the answers in community, where we can find support and figure out actions to take to bring about the world we wish to see. And Wisconsin is a good place to have this kind of conversation. Everyone who lives here has been an involuntary participant in a 14-year experiment to permanently establish authoritarian rule across all three branches of government, with increasing restrictions on voting, and a not at all representative state legislature. The people of Wisconsin are a complicated mix, as many of us know from our own families. There are those who adhere to conspiracy theories about stolen elections and woke takeovers, and these folks might actually welcome an autocratic ruler. They would rather be ruled than led. At the same time, there are so many of us who believe in secular government and fair electoral maps, the rainbow of human diversity, women's bodily autonomy, and the common good. A complicated mix, indeed. And throughout this trying time, with authoritarian maneuvers finding some success at the state and local levels, daily life has gone on as normal for most people. Offering a veneer of normalcy while the foundations of democracy are being eroded is a tactic straight out of the authoritarian playbook. Another tactic is to fan the flames of hatred about perceived internal and external threats to society and the nation. In 1930s Germany, the made-up internal threat was the Jewish community. Right now, in our own country, trans folk are the made-up threat of choice. This is a hard statistic to hear, but it is no accident that the percentage of Jews in Germany in 1933 and the percentage of trans-identified adults in the U.S. today, these percentages are nearly identical, between 0.5% and 0.75%. And similarly to Germany, we are seeing internally displaced refugees by the thousands, moving from one state to another in search of existential safety. The strategy of demonizing a tiny, often misunderstood minority and using religion to do so is a tactic right out of the authoritarian playbook. Tyrants always punch down for political gain. Now, there are countless crises that those of us in ministry could choose to focus on, but to my mind, very little else will matter if these kinds of things continue and we become more of an authoritarian country. Every one of our UU principles has been under siege, from the inherent dignity of all people, to the use of the democratic process, to the interdependent web of life that sustains us. And the values highlighted in the proposed revisions to our UU bylaws, values such as pluralism, equity, justice, these would be difficult to live out in a less free society. Now, unfortunately, history has generally not been kind to congregations and ministers and everyday people who have faced authoritarianism and fascism. First, there tends to be complacency, then looking away, then desensitization, and then voluntary or forced collaboration. All these things have tended to happen in reliable succession in many countries throughout history. Among the good news is the fact that the present-day United States has some advantages that have made authoritarianism less of a slam dunk here. A diverse population, no one dominant government-controlled church, still independent journalism, struggling but still independent, and strong civil institutions. Autocratic and theocratic leaders continue to take brutal aim at these strengths every day, so we know that it's still important for each of us to remain vigilant. The rapid flow of events can make us forget that a lot of what we are seeing actually isn't new. In the words of Adrienne Marie Brown, the African-American author and activist, things are not getting worse. They are getting uncovered. We must hold each other tight and continue to pull back the veil. The underlying American values that are allowing current events to go as they have been going, these are the same values that have existed for a long time. The storyline of domination, of the powerful taking what and who they want, is one of the main storylines of how our country was founded, built, and expanded. And that storyline continues to this day. So it is both painful and beneficial that things are getting uncovered. The truth is that Americans with authoritarian tendencies have always been with us and are likely to always be with us, sometimes at the Thanksgiving table, right? Globally and nationally, authoritarian citizens can be found across the political spectrum. While autocracy seems like it leans right, as it has in recent years in places like Hungary and India, there are also left-leaning people who would welcome and have welcomed dictators, a dictator who thinks like they do. Maybe some of you have heard of this, but there's actually a simple test that can predict whether an individual is likely to favor authoritarianism. It was developed in the early 1990s by a professor named Stanley Feldman. It's four short either-or questions about parenting. Parenting, not politics, because researchers discovered that authoritarianism is actually related more to personality than to political preferences. So I'll read these four questions, and you can take the quiz yourself if you like. And in coffee hour, we can talk about who's an authoritarian. Please tell me which one of the two choices you think is more important for a child: to have independence or to have respect for elders, to have obedience or self-reliance, to be considerate or to be well-behaved, to have curiosity or good manners. These simple, my mom's like, I want all those things in my children. But these simple questions have turned out to be remarkably good at predicting authoritarian tendencies, and they've been in use in research ever since. The respondents who choose the more hierarchical, rule-oriented answers, obedience over self-reliance, good manners over curiosity, these people are more likely to be authoritarian. And because parenting perspectives are passed down in families for generations starting at birth, you can see why this kind of thinking might be challenging to dislodge. It might be immune to political arguments entirely. It's a primal way of knowing. An estimated 30 to 40% of Americans have authoritarian tendencies. And as is obvious from current events, from small town school board meetings to the United States Supreme Court, the presence of those tendencies is going to be with us for a while. It's been a little daunting for me to realize that I expect to be keeping an eye on authoritarianism for the rest of my ministry and the rest of my life. But I know that that realization, that change for me, is a sign of the privilege I've enjoyed prior to the events of the past several years. I'll never forget the sentiment, the words of welcome, if you will, that a Black social media commentator who now goes by the handle Absurdist Words offered to white people in late 2016. I didn't find these words absurd at all. This feeling you have right now, amazement that the country could be so short-sighted that it could embrace hate so tightly, welcome. This despair and dread you feel, the indignation, the bewilderment, the hurt, the powerlessness, the fear for family and livelihood, welcome. That knot in your stomach, that feeling of heartache, that uncertainty about your safety, the deep sense of fundamental injustice, welcome. He goes on, I do not say this to diminish what you are feeling today. What you feel is real and valid. I'm giving you the opportunity to truly empathize. For it is that lack of empathy that allowed America to shrug as the marginalized shouted warnings. I've read similar thoughts, and maybe you have too, from other African Americans and from Native Americans. Welcome, white folks, to this messed up country that we've already been living in for a long time. This country that has felt to us like a dictatorship for centuries. So there are plenty of people in America who have felt powerlessness, who have had to learn resilience and resistance, who have planted a garden in the backyard when it wasn't safe to sit on the front porch, who have had to ceaselessly work for freedom. What has been happening lately to America as a whole has always been happening to some of its people. American authoritarianism was not invented in 2016. It was revealed anew. So what do we do with this chronic illness that our country has? How do we deal with the flare-ups and the uncertain outlook? How do we live lives of resistance? There may not be a cure for America's authoritarian streak, but there are tactics and strategies and resources and plenty of evidence of what works. One piece of advice I've already tried to demonstrate is how important it is for white people and white-dominated institutions to listen to people of color. This is something that has been increasingly happening in recent years across Unitarian Universalism, and maybe even in your own congregation. By forming social justice partnerships in local communities, centering stories of the marginalized, and by following the leadership of BIPOC congregants and national staff. Outside our UU movement, we can see around our country how people of color, often younger people of color, are making bold statements resisting the forces of authoritarianism. I think of those two Justins in Tennessee, who became instantly famous a year ago this spring, Justin Jones and Justin Pearson. Both under 30, they helped lead protests against the needless carnage of gun violence, and then they were expelled from their seats in the Tennessee legislature. As you probably know, they were propelled right back into office to keep fighting the tyranny of their gerrymandered one-party state. And shortly after, on a Sunday morning, Mr. Pearson, the son of a pastor, was the featured speaker at the Church of the River, Memphis's main UU congregation, in a profoundly moving and raucous two-hour service. It's on the internet if you've got some time. This was a great example of a more privileged church making space for and amplifying voices that are frequently marginalized. Good things happen when people unite across religions to resist tyranny. And an important message that's being underscored for us is that it's not too late. It's not too late to resist tyranny. It's not too late for the people of Tennessee to fight for laws that reflect their values. It's not too late to try to protect a small town school board or a library board from a white Christian nationalist agenda. This has been my mom's job in the suburbs of Milwaukee for the last years. It's not too late to turn the good ship Wisconsin back toward the progressive ideals that once made it great. Demoralization and hopelessness are tactics from the authoritarian playbook. So it's definitely not too late to remind everyone that it's not too late, and to remind ourselves that there is a role for everyone. Some people may not think of themselves as activists, but being a citizen and being a human comes with obligations to fellow humans and to the whole world. Your neutrality will not be appreciated, no matter how comfortable you are. And so many actions have value, like participating in electoral campaigns that speak to your values, or working as a poll worker or an election judge to keep the machinery of democracy moving. As frustrating and constraining as they can be, elections still have huge consequences. We can also take part in protests, particularly well-organized tactical ones that are led by marginalized groups and have specific goals around turnout and visibility. There are also more private forms of resistance that involve only yourself, such as being well-informed about current events and about the history of oppressions and authoritarianism. If you haven't already watched it, I highly recommend the Reverend Cecilia Kingman's Berry Street essay about fascism, delivered at the beginning of the 2023 General Assembly. That is also online. Another important form of resistance is to make sure you do not accept the normalization of anything that diminishes human flourishing, such as mass shootings or police brutality or laws against trans people or women. Followers of the authoritarian playbook love this kind of normalization. They want you to feel confused, bombarded, and hopeless that things must just have to be this way. It's a strategy they employ, wearing people out. Your internal resistance is important, so they don't succeed. And your resistance relies on your resilience, and your resilience relies on rest. So be sure to take breaks from the news, from social media, and from the work. This can be hard for some people to do, given the scope of challenges and the flood of information. And it can be especially hard to do if you like to help with campaigns here in Wisconsin, where there's a new election cycle every 10 minutes. So take the advice of Tricia Hersey, the self-appointed NAP bishop. Have you heard of her? She literally wrote a book on the topic called Rest is Resistance, a Manifesto. Saying no and holding boundaries is important, she says, adding, to me, that's justice. That's liberation. That's freedom. So budget your time and energy for the long haul. This advice was something I kept in mind the month before last when I volunteered to go door to door to support school board and city council candidates in the small Wisconsin town where I spend a good chunk of my time. I do not consider door knocking to be a gift of mine. I do not enjoy it, but it seemed like a good way to give a little of myself. I may not like canvassing, but I'd like living under a dictatorship even less. And so another volunteer and I trudged from house to house, equipped with inadequate brochures and with lawn signs that even agreeable voters didn't want, out of fear of creating tension with their neighbors. When we knocked and rang, most doors stayed closed, but we were able to make a few contacts, get people thinking about the important choices ahead. We did not come close to finishing our long list of houses to visit, but I declined to keep going beyond the end of my shift, knowing there would be other days and other volunteers. And the challenges of that afternoon were a reminder to increase my commitment to spiritual practices that reconnect me with life's beauty in this extra difficult year. I was also reminded to focus on those stories of success that we have experienced, even in this state, like the restoration of access to women's reproductive care and new legislative maps that are closer to actual democracy. Before I close, I want to talk a bit about hope. Because when we're talking about the long haul work of resisting tyranny, it can be helpful to remember the work of Joanna Macy, who wrote a book that some of you may have read called Active Hope. Macy defines hope not as something you feel, but as something you do. Active hope is a practice, she writes, like Tai Chi or gardening. It is something we do rather than have. She advises us to decenter our feelings, which can be unreliable, and center our intent. Since active hope doesn't require our optimism, she says, we can apply it even in areas where we feel hopeless. The guiding impetus is intention. We choose what we aim to bring about, act for, or express. Rather than weigh our chances and proceeding only when we feel hopeful, we focus on our intention and let it be our guide. As we continue our work to resist authoritarianism for the good of our country and everyone in it, may our intentions be our guide. May love be our guide. May we stay at each other's sides, take care of the vulnerable, and listen to the wisdom that is all around us. Together, forward is the way. Go forth and make a tyrant tremble. May it be so.